Hello and welcome to the St. Mary's podcast. My name is Adam Curtis. I'm one of the associate vicars here. And today I am joined by the one and only Ian Miller.
The other associate vicar.
It has been said that we're rivals. Not by me, must be said.
I'm not sure.
Why do you say you're not sure, Ian?
Well, I seem to remember you introducing me to your housemates as your rival.
That's true. We wanted to start with an example of toxic masculinity.
I wasn't going to go that far.
But I've actually trying to been doing lots of examples of toxic masculinity today to poor Ian. I was criticising him on our way down here when he said he was tired. I've just made him eat more food than he actually wanted to.
Yes, but it was a Nutella pizza, which I've never had before.
Oh, and it was absolutely...
It was
beautiful.
It was really good. Yeah, I was impressed. Really impressed.
But now on to our topic of today, which is toxic masculinity. Now, toxic masculinity seems to be the phrase of the moment. It's all over social media. Lots of people seem to be talking about it. But also, lots of people seem to be engaging not just critically of it, but also positively with it as well. The influencer Andrew Tate. It seems like millions, if not billions of people seem to be watching his content on a very regular basis. So toxic masculinity seems to be all around us. But for some people who are listening, they might hear the phrase toxic masculinity, they might hear the name Andrew Tate, and they just have no idea what that is. So Ian, what is toxic masculinity?
Well, that's a really good question. I think when people talk about toxic masculinity, they're often thinking about what they regard as a real man. Mm. So if you take Andrew Tate, for example, he has an idea of what he thinks a real man is. And the sort of examples of toxic masculinity that you see out there are ones that have an idea of manliness being based on strength, on lack of emotion, on self-sufficiency, on dominance and on sexual virility. So that's the sort of idea. If you don't display enough of those traits, you're not considered to be a real man.
I just have to say at this moment, I think I'm failing in his definition of masculinity.
Of toxic masculinity.
Yeah,
toxic. Definition of masculinity is different. To a toxic masculinity. And it's interesting the way though that works out in the example of Andrew Tate, who is a particularly... striking example of it. You watch his videos on social media, and on one hand, I find it sort of vaguely comic because he always does it with his six pack. He's not wearing a top, and he's speaking bare chested to the video and all the rest of it. But he has this great sort of notion that being a real man involves being strong. And Andrew Tate himself was a professional kickboxer. He uses his strength. You know, he's obviously aggressive, and he uses it to dominate, and doesn't shy away from fighting. So you see the sort of example of a man who, you can see what his idea of strength looks like. But he's also got a big idea of success. So he, you know, somebody who's successful is somebody who has a fast car, usually a Lambo. A Lamborghini, somebody who has money, he's big on the wealth. You often see him smoking his cigar, and a man who has lots of women. So that's his idea of success.
And let's dig a little bit particularly into his attitude towards women, because I think that has been particularly troubling. Could you maybe just explain that a little bit for us, his attitude towards women?
Well, it is appalling, really. He's got this idea that women should belong to men. He brags about his own promiscuity, but if there's a suggestion that a woman could be promiscuous, he's down on that. So he's a completely unequal idea of men and women. He thinks women should be submissive and obedient. And I wrote this down. He said here's a quote from him: "There is no such thing as too submissive." That's him talking about women. I came across a TikTok video which had been circulated millions of times, and there's just this awful quote I found from him. He said if a girl accused him of cheating, he said and I inverted commas, slap, slap, grab, choke, shut up, bitch, sex. I mean, just this sort of horrendous attitude towards women.
Mm.
Really, really troubling. I mean, it troubles me as a father of four daughters, but it would trouble me anyway. You don't have to have daughters or a wife to be troubled by it. It's deeply troubling.
Of course. But what's then particularly, I don't know if interesting is the right word, maybe shocking, is the fact that there is so much traction. Because we hear that description there, and immediately we're like, that makes me feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that makes lots of other people feel uncomfortable as well. So why do you think he and others like him, why have they got such an appeal? Why have they got such traction?
I do think that's a really interesting question. And I think there are a number of different strands to this. I think one of them is what you might broadly call liberal progressivism. So actually, a lot of young men are feeling that they've been confronted constantly with a feminist message.
Mm.
They've also been confronted with environmentalism. You know, they've constantly been told that they're not treating women well enough. They're not they're not doing enough for the environment. And then there's the transgender movement. These are all things actually Andrew Tate focuses on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting that actually I read something from a journalist who said this. She said, "Boys in their bedrooms find his rude and ruthless evisceration of every sacred liberal value hilarious." And I kind of just picture the boy who might have come out of a PSHE lesson at school, and he's on his way home and he's mucking about on his phone, and just the very stuff that he is feeling kind of pressurized with is just being laughed at in a way that just feels liberating, I guess, and makes him laugh. And so I wonder whether there isn't something of that sort of reaction against liberal progressivism. I think there's also this whole thing of a destruction of traditional masculine roles. I mean, they've been questioned and demolished, but they've not been replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And there was that story of the schoolboys in an Australian classroom who were asked to all stand up and apologise for everything that men had done wrong.
Mm.
And, you know, there was a sense of, you know, you can't place that burden on every boy, that they are to shoulder the burden of everything that every man has sort of done wrong in the past. And I was interested to read an article by Hugo Rifkind in The Times. He spoke of the fact that he knows what to say to his daughter. You know, that you're every bit as good as a man, if not better. But what do you then say to your son?
Mm.
And there's this kind of like, we don't know. We've demolished what was traditionally understood to be masculinity, but we haven't known what to put in its place.
Mm.
And so into the void comes the likes of people like, well, comes toxic masculinity and the people like Hugo Rifkind. I'm sorry, Andrew Tate. Apologies to Hugo Rifkind.
And this then makes me feel like we have to come up with a solution. We have to be providing a solution. We have to be providing a better vision to our young men of what real, godly, righteous masculinity is.
Yeah. Like,
we can't actually just remain silent about this.
Yeah.
Because if every previous definition of masculinity is just being attacked, but nothing new is being put in its place, then that is not a healthy place to be.
No.
So can you help us think through a solution, a positive vision in which we can be giving to our young men?
Yeah, sure. It's interesting because you see, another reason why Andrew Tate, I think, gets attraction is because he is telling a story. He's speaking to the struggles of men, young men particularly. He's motivating. He's telling a story in which there's good and there's bad and in which there's a saviour. No prizes for guessing that's him. Although he might not surprise you that he, perhaps we never not to go into the US general election. But anyway, he it's interesting, he tells a story. And, you know, there have been solutions proposed. So the Labour Party, I think is to be commended that they put out a policy in March to suggest a way in which they might be able to tackle this crisis in masculinity, and they want to develop positive feminist male influences. But again, you know, when that policy came out, journalists were criticising it, saying, well, you know, it's just not going to work. Girls are given something positive and told that they can be, you know, about how they can be good women, but boys are just being told that to be a man is to treat women well. And the general consensus seems to be that's just not going to gain traction. So what's that better story, to come back to your question? I think a better story starts, we see that in the Bible. We see it, we starts with creation.
Mm.
You know, it is incredible. Over and over again, we go back to those first chapters of Genesis, and we find gold dust, which speaks so powerfully to the issues of our day. So we see that when God creates the world, and then when he's creating men and women, he looks upon his creation and he says it's very good.
Mm.
And that's wonderful, because it reminds us that actually to be a man is very good.
Mm.
But also to be a woman is very good. That is already starting off with a positive view of both the sexes. But then we see that man is made in God's image, and that is such a powerful thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that if we're made in, if male and female are made in God's image, we are equal. And that is so powerful, because actually that means that men are neither inferior, mm-hmm. which I think is what some young men are feeling with some of the feminist stuff they're hearing,
mm-hmm.
but nor are men superior, which is what Andrew Tate is pushing.
Mm-hmm.
So that equality is so important. But of course, being made in God's image means that we have dignity and value. So men have dignity and value because they're created in the image of God. But women have the same dignity and value. And so there's no place for women being mistreated in the way that, you know, that some of those who've been peddling this sort of toxic masculine agenda have been doing at all. And then, of course, you know, I mean, there's so much gold dust in these first parts of Genesis. But let me touch on one more thing, which is that God gives us a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
He gives us a task of ruling over creation, of creating culture, and ultimately, of course, as we go through the Bible, we see that becoming, you know, our role as Christians is playing a part in building God's kingdom. And so we have this sort of task which has an eternal consequences. Andrew Tate's vision is an ephemeral one. It's a sort of one that doesn't last. It's a vision of wealth and success and sex, all of which are here today and gone tomorrow. But actually, God gives us a meaning and purpose in our lives which are lasting.
And I love that. I love it because immediately, when we view ourselves as men, and when we hope our young men view themselves as men, through this lens which Genesis gives us, that God sees us as people who've got dignity, people who've got value, and people who've got purpose.
Mm.
So actually, we have a reason to be here.
Yeah.
and actually having a reason to live, to breathe, to move, to create and to do things is such a joyous thing.
Yeah.
Because actually you then don't have to live a meaningless life of just entertainment and thrills and trying to distract yourself before you've reached your 80 years and they're done.
Yeah.
You actually get to live a life filled with the good works which God has got us to do. I think a comeback question,
yeah.
which could be thrown at you, Ian, was, okay, I get that.
Yeah.
That is so lovely and wonderful that the young man doesn't have to listen to Andrew Tate, that there's a better story in the eyes of God,
yeah.
that they've got dignity, value, and purpose.
Yeah.
But why does it just feel so hard?
Yeah.
Why does it feel hard to accept those truths and that reality and to live out this purpose?
I think the answer to that lies in, I mean, this is what's so beautiful, is that the Bible does tell us a story that makes sense of our life. And that's why, there's so much precious stuff in Genesis 1 and 2. And then when we get to Genesis 3, it's absolutely devastating because it all falls apart with the fall, with Adam and Eve turning their backs on God and his beautiful way and wanting to go their own way. And yet, again, that makes sense of the world as you and I know it, in the way that I think this toxic masculinity just doesn't. You know, actually, the problem is not the transgender movement. It's not the feminist movement. It's not the environmental movement. Mm-hmm. The problem that we all have actually lies in our own hearts, and lies in our own rebellion against God, which is what we see happening in Genesis 3. And that means that actually the real enemy is not the enemies that someone like Andrew Tate will identify, but it is actually sin and the devil. Mm. The problem is our sin, but it also shows us, the more we look at that, the more we see that actually this is so deep rooted in us. It's something that we are powerless to deal with ourselves. And, you know, Andrew Tate, I'm going to keep coming back to him, but he sort of has in many ways come to embody toxic masculinity. But actually, he wants to talk about strength. When toxic masculinity, we'll talk so much about strength. But actually, you know, when we actually begin to understand what the world is really like, we see that we are weak. Mm-hmm. Because in the face of the sin and the devil, we're powerless to do anything by ourselves. Mm. So our situation is... We're in a bad place,
and that's an important distinction, isn't it? It's an important distinction to make it very clear that actually we're disagreeing with Andrew Tate and the other, and those who also promote toxic masculinity. We're disagreeing with what we think the problem is.
Yeah.
And yes. Actually, we think the problem is actually worse than what they think.
Yeah.
Because if it was something like a political movement or a way of life, then actually through human effort we could probably make serious change.
Yeah.
But if we're saying actually the problem is to do with our own human heart and our own sinfulness, well, that's far more problematic, because I can't pull out this heart of mine and deal with that problem. So if we're disagreeing with what the problem is, and we're actually saying it's a human heart, then what is the Christian solution then?
Well, it may not surprise you to hear the Christian solution is Christ. It is Jesus Christ. You know, and it's so interesting, isn't it? I just love looking at this and thinking it through. You know, look at Jesus. He does look like a loser in the eyes of toxic masculinity. When you're looking at Jesus, I mean, we look at his life, it looks like the opposite. It looks like he's a total loser. He's born in poverty. He mixes with all sorts of dropouts and outcasts. Mm. He values women. He's single. He doesn't get married. Not that he's down on marriage at all, but he doesn't have sex. He's single. He talks about being gentle and humble. He talks about loving other people. And in fact, he goes so far as to say that, you know, if somebody hits us or abuses us, we're to off the other cheek. Mm. He talks about forgiveness, not just forgiving once or twice, but 70 times, 7 times, you know. There's that sort of powerful passage in Mark chapter 10 when the disciples are arguing about who's the greatest, and Jesus says actually, you know, true greatness is found in service. Jesus then, of course, when he's arrested, he doesn't fight back. When he's on trial, he actually remains silent rather than lashing out or even trying to fight his corner. He's utterly humiliated. He's spat on by Roman soldiers, and then he is humiliated even more when he goes to the cross and he's nailed there naked and he's crucified. So in the eyes of, he doesn't look on the face of it like he's a great example, but actually he shows strength that no man has ever shown. And that is just the beauty of it. I mean, you see this right from the beginning of the Gospels, don't you? He resists temptation. There is the devil tempting him. Jesus resists that temptation. That throughout his life, he's hounded by the establishment. And yet he goes on. He breaks social norms. He doesn't break social norms in the most extraordinary way. The way he speaks to the outcasts, the way he treats women, is breathtaking. His teaching absolutely stuns the crowds and draws those crowds and stuns them. We're told over again that they're amazed by what he says. But he challenges us to deny ourselves, to take up our cross and to follow him. And then it's so striking as you read through the gospel, isn't it, that he keeps predicting that he will die. He was going to Jerusalem to die for our sins. He knows what's going to happen. And yet here is a man who has the strength to go through with that, to go all the way to Jerusalem, to go to the cross, and going deliberately to his death. He forgives people when he's actually been nailed to the cross. Mm. And he takes the judgment that you and I deserve and then rises from the dead. I mean, wow. He rises from the dead. He overcomes sin and death. We see that conquered. And then we see him rising, ascending to heaven, sit at the right hand of God, in all authority and power. So he is, if we want someone who shows strength, well, here is someone who shows extraordinary strength. Tells us a better story, because actually in that story he shows us that we have our identity.
Mm.
You know, we have an identity in him and nothing can change it, nothing can shift it. Mm. We have value. He's the one who's prepared to die for us. Mm. Despite the fact we are completely undeserving, he gives us meaning of value. You know, when we put our trust in him, he takes up residence in our hearts, and we our lives are lived for him, and we have this glorious future ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be easy now. I mean, we're not promised an easy life as Christians, but wow, what a life with meaning and purpose we have in Christ. So yes, he's the one who tells a better story.
Oh, beautiful. And what a beautiful story.
Yeah.
It's a better story and it's a beautiful story and it will create a better world.
Yeah.
That's what I love about it, because I hear Andrew Tate and I hear this vision of reality which he wants to create. And I just think it sounds cold, it sounds cruel.
Mm.
And the world it would build would be one of selfishness and pleasure,
yeah,
one of manipulation and putting people down, where this vision of the world which Jesus wants men to build, and women as well, but we're talking into the male, into toxic masculinity, he wants men to build, it is one where they sacrificially serve other people, where they follow in Jesus' footsteps and give themselves for the other. And what a wonderful world that would be to live in.
Mm-hmm.
Where actually your neighbour is serving you and you're serving them.
Yeah.
Where actually the poor and the needy are being lifted up and looked after. And actually where people have got your back and are trying to help you and encourage you. Like, that would be a beautiful world to live in.
Yeah.
And that's the world which Jesus is inviting us to build.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just such a better image. Now, for those Ian who are listening to this now, and maybe this is the first time they've really thought it through, who Jesus Christ is, and actually the fact that Jesus Christ might have something to say into this area, this topic of masculinity, mm. What would you want them to hear at this particular moment? What would you want them to go and do?
Well, my first challenge would be pick up a gospel, read through the gospel, and just think about think about the example of masculinity that Jesus gives. Mm. Just think about it as you go through those stories, those encounters with Jesus has with people. What example is he giving us? And actually the beauty of it is it doesn't matter whether I'm good at sport or rubbish at sport, whether I'm physically strong or weak. Actually, there is an example of masculinity for all of us that he gives us. But that would be my first challenge. Pick it up, read a gospel. But the other thing I long to see, I think a lot of people are thinking about this problem of toxic masculinity, mm-hmm. Christian and non-Christian, we know that. But I think, you know, the challenge for us as Christians is, how can we be engaging the millions of young men out there with this better story? These millions of young men who have been misled by this by this toxic masculinity. And you know, so it's an absolute tragedy. It's so desperate that people are being sort of given false hope by a story that it just won't satisfy or take them nowhere. And yet we do have this glorious story. So my great challenge for us is, how are we going to reach people with a better story?
Oh, what a fantastic challenge. And what a fantastic episode. Thank you, Ian, so much for coming on, for sharing your wisdom with us on this topic. And this is over and out now from me, Adam Curtis, and the St. Mary's podcast. But if you find yourself in the St. Mary's area, please do come and visit us at the church on a Sunday. We've got 5 services, so we'll probably be open at some time where you're free. And we'd love to meet you in person if you're not already a part of this church. But goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me too.